For over a month now, Kenya has been plunged in a crisis that has cost the lives of hundreds of people, destruction of property and loss of income. Over 300,000 people are said to have fled their homes. Even life in neighboring countries like Uganda and Rwanda, which depend on the ports of Kenya, have been affected by a crisis that doesn't seem to let up. December 27th, Paul, was Kenya's fourth multi-party presidential election. Violence broke out, with the opposition claiming that the election was rigged. Masai David is a university student currently in Nairobi.
Actually, all this chaos that has been arising is because of that dispute of the presidential elections.
Okay.
Yes.
And how has it affected life in Nairobi? For you, you're a student.
Ooh, life is terrible, my friend. I'm telling you, so many things have burned. Petrol, fuel, things are high, skyrocketed high. Food is very costly. Rate of insecurity is very high. You find various communities are being flushed out from particular regions where they used to stay and do their businesses.
Frederick Gatiritsi, an African security analyst, says that there is more to Kenya's post-election violence. He says that there are other underlying conflicts and tensions that are coming into play.
The trouble that were witnessed during the elections brought up also some old animosity, which were tribal. And the tribal animosity finds its roots in the economic problems that Kenya has had, pretty much the unequal distribution of resources that Kenya has had.
Kenya has over 40 tribes, and many believe that the crisis has taken on an ethnic face. Vincent Makori is a Kenyan journalist based in the U.S. He blames the Kenyan leadership over the years for using tribal affiliation to serve their political ends.
Whichever way you look at it, although Kenya has been a very peaceful country, all the ethnic groups have coexisted very peacefully. There is a tendency to identify with one's ethnicity, especially at the time of the elections. And this is a failing of the leadership, because leaders, in as much as they preach nationalism at the time of elections, actually they do fall back to their ethnic base. And that ethnic base many times does determine even who becomes president, because you'll find that you are likely to be elected the president of Kenya if you come from a large tribe. And then a large tribe does build bridges with another larger tribe.
Right.
And therefore, what we have seen over the years is an appeal to your people, meaning your ethnic group first, to give you the necessary support before you can actually go and appeal to the other communities. So whichever way you look at it, yes, ethnicity plays a big part in politics in Kenya, and even in the formation of political parties, which in many respects are actually ethnic affiliation.
Most of the protesters in Nairobi slums and other places belong to the Luo and the Kalenjin tribes, while the majority of victims of the recent violence have been the Kikuyu. Makori says that the crisis demonstrates the historic patterns of uneven resource distribution in Kenya.
At the moment, what's happening is that the election crisis, in fact, has triggered other forms of crisis, like the question of land. So apart from the demonstrations that we've been seeing in areas against the government over the stolen election, now we are witnessing also other age-old grievances being played out through this violence. That is the question of land ownership. In the area of Rift Valley, which is traditionally actually an ancestral land of the people called the Kalenjin and the Maasai, there is a huge population of the Kikuyus who move there, and the people called the Kisis and others like the Luyas. And these have lived there for many, many years, but now the Kalenjins and other groups in that area like the Sabaut are saying, this is our ancestral land. After independence, it was supposed to have been distributed to us after the white people left.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is that Jomo Kenyatta did actually, instead of resettling or redistributing the land to the people who ancestrally owned that land, distributed it to
his own people,
people from the central province, right, who had been displaced during the colonial era.
Mm.
So the biggest question is, how do you guarantee the people of Rift Valley that their children and grandchildren can have the right to land, which now is in the hands of people they perceive as outsiders. That's a big problem.
Vincent Macquarie adds that there are many lessons that can be taken from the Kenyan crisis by other African countries.
We can say that in as much as Kenya has been seen as the most stable, has been obviously one of the most prosperous nations in that region, there were some structural problems that had never been addressed before. And those have to do with an inherited faulty constitution from the colonial era, which in effect failed to build institutions, and therefore Kenya has not managed to build institutions that are protecting the citizens against the excesses of the executive, such that, for instance, what we are witnessing now is where the laws and the constitution of the land have been manipulated by politicians in order to serve their personal interests.
Both Vincent Macquarie and Frederick Gateritse say that for there to be a peaceful resolution in this crisis, both sides need to come to a round table and talk peace. For Voice of America, I'm Jackson Vunganyi.